This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. This week, we are continuing our monthly series on aging. According to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, hundreds of thousands of seniors experience elder abuse each year in America. This mistreatment could be physical, financial, or even come from self-neglect. On today's show, we'll talk about how local officials are addressing the problem of elder abuse, both in Wisconsin and Minnesota. Joining us today are Kathy Gogger, Supervisor of Trempealeau County's Aging and Disability Resource Center, Harlan Reinders, Chief Deputy Sheriff of Trempealeau County, and Marit Peterson, Program Director for the Minnesota Elder Justice Center. And Marit, we'll start with you. You know, how prevalent do you feel like elder abuse is in our region?
Well, it's highly prevalent, and I think because elder abuse refers to the experience of abuse, neglect, and financial exploitation taken together, as well as, depending upon the organization, also self-neglect, it's difficult to put an exact finger on the specific statistical prevalence in terms of prevalence versus other types of crimes, prevalence versus other types of experiences that individuals might have, or prevalence based on residential status, if somebody is living at home or if somebody is living in a congregate setting. But we know that it's prevalent, and even more importantly, perhaps, than the specific prevalence, we know that elder abuse is underreported. And so even the statistical information we have about the occurrence of crimes related to elder abuse, neglect, and financial exploitation, we know that that data is limited only to those incidents that are reported. And so because so much is unreported, we know that it's even more significant than the data might suggest.
And Kathy, you know, what's your take on the prevalence of elder abuse? Do you feel like this is maybe a growing problem?
It is. We're seeing an increase in the number of reports that are coming in, and for numerous reasons. One, there are definitely more elderly people now than there used to be. It's an area of age group that's growing rapidly. We're talking about, by 2030, 72.1 million older Americans, and it will comprise 20%. So we're going to continue to see an increase in those numbers.
Absolutely. And Harlan, do you feel like people know that elder abuse is an issue? Do you feel like enough, you know, a lot of times with issues of domestic abuse, it's, you know, difficult to talk about. People often don't report it. So do you feel like people are aware that this is a problem?
You know, generally speaking, probably not. You know, when you think about it, a lot of these are private issues. And, you know, people are embarrassed about stuff like this. And when you're talking about financial issues where maybe there's some type of fraud involved or something like that, you know, people are embarrassed to say that they kind of got duped. You know what I mean? And the thing is with the generation that's older, they come from a trusting generation. And, you know, when somebody gives you a handshake, it's their word, and you trust what they have to say. And so when they run into people that are, you know, con artists and looking for a scam and a quick buck, they believe those people can be trusted. And so what happens is they're a little embarrassed when it happens. And so maybe the family doesn't report it because their wishes are that they don't say anything.
Mm-hmm. And Kathy, do you feel like, you know, with seniors, that I mean, a lot of times they start to lose their mobility and become more dependent on others. You know, how often are seniors not reporting cases of elder abuse because, you know, they don't want to alienate the people who are caring for them?
Right. What the figures that I have seen talks about, only 1 in 14 elder people that are actually abused is actually reported. So the numbers are pretty staggering, what you think could be out there. People that tend to be abused, whether it's neglect, self-neglect, physical abuse, or financial abuse, there are many risk factors that are involved with that, because people, just because they're older, don't necessarily mean that, you know, they're going to be abused. But with age comes the issues like dementia, social isolation, and poor physical health, which puts those elders at more risk of being taken advantage of.
And Marit, You know, who are the common culprits of elder abuse? You know, is it family caregivers? Is it people who are, you know, caring for their family members? Or, you know, is it more nursing homes and assisted living facilities?
Yeah, excellent question. I think, you know, statistics show that 2/3 of cases of elder abuse are perpetrated by a person who could be considered a trusted individual in the life of the victim. So whether that might be a family member or a caregiver, regardless, it's somebody who occupies a position of trust. And then that would leave the remaining 1/3 of cases to be perpetrated by strangers. So we really are looking at crimes that are often taking place at the hands of a person who could be a family member, could be a caregiver, and in any cases a person that has a relationship of trust with a victim.
And how does that, you know, complicate things?
It complicates things enormously. I mean, without question, I believe Kathy referred to the nature of the experience that folks might have if they're relying on, or perhaps Hope, you might have mentioned this, relying on a caregiver to remain, for example, independently living. The notion that a person, by reporting abuse, might make themselves vulnerable to a change in their living circumstances can become extremely complicated. And certainly we know that that's something that perpetrators will hold over victims, the threat that a person might not be able to remain in their home without the assistance of another individual, even if that individual might be perpetrating elder abuse or perpetrating financial exploitation. That fear causes a lot of complexity. In addition, you know, the kinds of outcomes that we often think of as associated with the reporting of crime and the prosecution of crime are outcomes that are complicated for victims of elder abuse to contemplate, particularly if it involves family members going to jail or prison. What we do know about victims of elder abuse is that they want the abuse to stop. They want to stop experiencing whatever it is that they're experiencing, whether that's physical, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, financial exploitation, neglect. But they may not necessarily desire what we would consider to be traditional outcomes, jail or prison or these kinds of outcomes. What we would typically use as tools in situations of intimate partner violence, such as protection orders and harassment orders that prevent contact between perpetrators and victims, to protect victims in that way, that sometimes can be complex for victims of elder abuse who want to remain in contact with, say, for example, a son or daughter. So a complicated results out of the fact that relationships between victims and perpetrators are often closer relationships in elder abuse.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about how resources in Wisconsin and Minnesota are helping address and prevent elder abuse. We're here with Kathy Gauger from Trempealeau County's Aging and Disability Resource Center in Whitehall, Harlan Reinders, Trempealeau County Chief Deputy, and Marit Peterson, Program Director for the Minnesota Elder Justice Center based in St. Paul. You know, and Marit's been talking about how, you know, when these cases of elder abuse deal with, you know, a family caregiver actually causing the abuse, that sometimes seniors don't want that family member to face, you know, traditional outcomes of crime. You know, Harlan, how does that complicate things for, you know, for law enforcement who, you know, are trying to deal with these issues?
Yeah, you know, we have to obviously rely upon, you know, the willingness of individuals to report this information. And then on top of that, you know, the witnesses, you know, if you want to call them, or those that are involved, sometimes the numbers are limited. So your resources as far as actually reaching out and getting the information may come from, you know, if it's in a financial situation, from maybe, you know, bank records or statements or things like that, or if it's some type of a medical situation, it'll come from medical records or examinations. And if they're unwilling to provide that information or go in for medical examinations, that's sometimes where your evidence lies. So that makes it difficult. So it really comes down to, you know, the information that you really can get outside of those witnesses sometimes, because, you know, one will say that, you know, maybe mom doesn't, you know, doesn't quite understand or something like that, and paint this picture that maybe they're, you know, not thinking as clearly in the situation, you know, so they, you know, kind of marginalize some things. And again, you know, maybe if it is a family member, they're trusting of that other person, so they really don't want to, you know, scrutinize, you know, the care that they have been receiving from that person. So, I mean, it is a difficult situation to report, but, you know, when we partner with, you know, the Department of Human Services and folks like Kathy here, you know, and we do a joint effort sometimes when, you know, they've already had a relationship with this family through maybe other support areas and things like that, that law enforcement maybe doesn't seem quite as scary, if you want to use those words, because they've already built a relationship with that family offering support in other areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that was going to be my next question, is that, you know, do you find that it's easier for people to maybe report these issues to someone like Kathy at the ADRC rather than going, you know, to law enforcement?
Well, it is true. And whether it's easier or not easier, it's hard to say, but we do receive reports from the Department of Human Services, I mean, from Kathy's office. We get phone calls from them. Sometimes we'll get it directly from a family member, and then we turn around and partner with the Department of Human Services to do a joint investigation into these, because we both have obviously resources and abilities and talents that actually can hopefully, you know, provide some conclusion to the investigation and successfully you know, get this to stop and protect those that are victimized.
Mm-hmm. And Kathy, you started to go into this a little bit earlier, but, you know, what makes seniors maybe particularly prone to abuse or vulnerable?
Well, many of the seniors that we have seen are people that have the vulnerability. They have other issues going on. They have health issues. They have dementia, possibly some financial issues, and like Harlan had said, they're very trusting. And so when they're working with people, they're just, they fall prey to people that that actually they care about. And so when these kinds of situations arise, that's when the abuse occurs.
And Mara, you know, can you tell us a little bit about the Minnesota Elder Justice Center? Tell us a little bit about the work that you guys are doing over in Minnesota.
Absolutely. We work in four different areas. Our mission is to mobilize communities to prevent and alleviate abuse, neglect, and financial exploitation. And we do that through professional education. So we try to work with professionals that have contact with older, vulnerable adults to make sure that they have information and tools that they can use in serving those communities and recognizing warning signs, understanding risk factors, understanding reporting procedures. And then we do that same kind of information presentation with community groups. So we do some public awareness education around that issue as well. We also take direct service calls, so we get a lot of calls from folks in our communities across the state of Minnesota when they have questions about similar issues, what constitutes abuse, what are risk factors, what will happen if I make a report to adult protection, what will happen if I make a report to law enforcement. So lots of questions around those kinds of issues coming in on the phone lines. And then finally, we do some policy advocacy when the time is right and when the stakeholder groups come together here to help guide that. So we do that sort of four-part action and hope to get good information to people about the, I think, importance of recognizing elder abuse, recognizing risk factors and warning signs, and then all of the resources that might be available to a person who is experiencing abuse, neglect, or financial exploitation.
And Mara, when you're hosting these kind of community conversations or public forums, you know, are you finding that people are surprised by some of the information that you're, you know, providing?
I think so. I do think that we present a statistic when we're talking with groups about this regarding the prevalence of elder abuse, and Hope, you had asked about this at the beginning of our conversation. you know, in terms of prevalence, we do know that a study has shown that 1 in 10 individuals experiences elder abuse over the age of 65. So 1 in 10 individuals over the age of 65 experiences elder abuse, which is a pretty extraordinary statistic, 10% of people. But we also know that when a diagnosis of cognitive impairment is made, that statistic climbs to 1 in 5 individuals who experiences elder abuse. And those two statistics alone are very startling to groups that we communicate with. Again, I think reflecting the fact that these are underreported experiences, and as both Kathy and Harlan have reflected in their own remarks, you know, there's a lot of worry and a lot of embarrassment around the experience of elder abuse that act as barriers to reporting. And I think that is what's reflected in some of the surprise over the extraordinary prevalence of these crimes.
And Kathy, can you tell us a little bit about what the ADRC in Trempealeau County is doing to address elder abuse?
Okay. Part of our mission with the ADRC is to educate people, because the more people know about elder abuse and the more they realize the prevalence and the fact that we can help people. We can provide services. We can help counsel people when they're actually experiencing elder abuse. Our biggest goal is we would love to stop elder abuse. You're never going to stop it. So what you have to do is educate and allow people the opportunity to know, you know, what goes on, how it goes on, and to help people feel more comfortable dealing with the issue.
Mm-hmm. You know, and what are some of the laws in Wisconsin surrounding elder abuse?
Well, it's interesting because in Wisconsin, there is not an elder abuse law. You can't arrest someone for elder abuse. What the elder abuse law is Wisconsin, it's a reporting law. And what the law states basically is every county board has to name a county agency to be their lead elder abuse investigation agency. It also states what people are mandatory reporters, how they should report, how long the elder abuse agency has to investigate, to start an initial investigation. In Wisconsin, we have 24 hours to start an initial investigation. Basically, what the law is it allows, it just tells people where to go and how we respond to it. Wisconsin is a right to self-determination state. We'll go out, we get an investigation, and we go out, and if the person is perfectly competent and is, you know, oriented and knows what's going on, if they don't want to report it or they don't want it to go any further, we cannot force them. We cannot go in and say, this has got to stop. If the person is not competent and there are signs that they don't know what's going on, then we can go in and give them other services, possibly take them into protective custody, and it's just that, protective custody. Of course, there's a lot of criteria that has to be met to do that. In order to take them out of the situation. But if they are competent and they don't wish to do anything, and that's what's frustrating at times is everyone sees what's going on. And it's not only frustrating to us as professionals, but sometimes family members or friends are saying, why can't you do something about it? Why can't you go in and force them to, you know, do these things? And we can't if they're a competent individual.
And Marit, you know, what are the laws in Minnesota around elder abuse?
Sure. Well, Minnesota's structure is based around vulnerable adult legislation that went into effect in 1980. And in Minnesota, we actually have a definition of vulnerable adult versus a definition of elder. So protections in Minnesota extend to anybody over the age of 18 who meets as part of a statutory definition as either a categorical or a functional vulnerable adult. So we don't really necessarily call out older adults in the statute, but certainly for older adults that are experiencing categorical or functional vulnerability, the protections will that are highlighted in the statute will apply to those individuals. But the Vulnerable Adult Act creates reporting obligations similar to Wisconsin's obligations, so identifies who is mandated to report and then creates structures around that reporting and timelines. It also identifies certain kinds of actions as specific crimes, and so for example, in Minnesota, and I think Harlan may also be able to speak to this as to the Wisconsin side, but you know, it's possible to investigate, for example, financial crimes as fraud or theft by swindle. There are certain times approaches that can be taken with regard to financial crimes. In Minnesota, we also have a financial exploitation of a vulnerable adult crime. We also have criminal neglect in Minnesota, and so that's another protection that Minnesota offers in law. And in Minnesota, in 2012, neglect that is of a particularly egregious kind, so neglect that lasts for a particularly long time or that has extraordinarily negative results, or results in death or serious harm, can also be identified as a felony. That's a relatively recent development in Minnesota law. So there are some good protections in Minnesota as well for vulnerable adults, any individual over the age of 18 who experiences these kinds of categorical or functional vulnerabilities, and that would include elders or older adults as well.
That's Marit Peterson, Program Director for the Minnesota Elder Justice Center, here with us today to talk about elder abuse. Also joining our conversation is Kathy Gogger, Supervisor of Trempealeau County's Aging and Disability Resource Center, and Harlan Reinders, Chief Deputy of Trempealeau County. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And Harlan, did you, you know, have any other comments to make about the laws or regulations regarding elder abuse in Wisconsin?
Well, one of the things I think that you really need to focus on is prevention. I think that's the number one thing. If we can get out there and get the word out there and educate the public, educate the families, because obviously we're all getting older, and we're all going to fall into this criteria or this category someday. And so, you know, if we build that good support structure around us and know what the signs are and to look for those signs, I think that's very, very important. And obviously, you know, unfortunately, if somebody is victimized through abuse or financial or physical or whatever it may be, is that it gets reported right away. Because when you report those things quickly, maybe we call it, you know, the evidence that we have, we don't want it to get old. And we want to make sure that it's fresh, it's in people's minds. They recall things easier, but as time goes on, and if they allow a week or a month or 6 months to go by and people's recollection isn't quite as good, or maybe those records aren't available anymore, and so it makes it a little bit more difficult. So we encourage people, like any crime that's out there, really, when we investigate these types of crimes, we do it, you know, I want to say generally the same way. I mean, we treat everybody with dignity and respect, and we try to get to the bottom of it and find out what's going on and to be truth seekers and find the facts and then to lay out a case. And if there is a crime, to get it to the district attorney's office for prosecution.
And, you know, do law enforcement receive any special training for these cases? A lot of times, you know, it sounds like they're very similar to other cases of, you know, theft or you know, scams. But, you know, is there special training involved for elder abuse cases?
You know, there is training out there for it. And, you know, we always look for opportunities and ways to get our officers training and to deal with the different people that we deal with. We deal with all kinds of different segments of the population, young and middle-aged and old. And so we're always working and striving to get our officers, you know, the best information forward to help with the investigation. But again, coming back and partnering with the Department of Human Services, who are really kind of experts at dealing with their area and their niche. So we want to make sure that, you know, we don't kind of walk off and do our own investigation without partnering with them.
And, you know, Kathy, what are some of the common signs of abuse happening, for seniors?
Well, depending on the situation and what type of abuse is happening, quite often they become, if they're very outgoing and all of a sudden they, you know, become withdrawn, you don't see them out and about very often. It can be the fact, one, that they're embarrassed about what's going on, so they just don't go out at all, or two, that the perpetrator is isolating that person and controlling that person, takes away their car keys, takes away their phones, is always there when they're making phone calls just to make sure that they're not, talking to other people. Financial abuse is, a number of different things. Going to the financial institution and making numerous withdrawals when they typically don't make any withdrawals, or all of a sudden the checking account is they're writing checks out to different people or to different places. Anything that is a change in their normal behavior is a red flag for something. And so quite often the red flags get very, very bright before people will report it to us. So we just try and encourage people, if you think something is not right, to call us, because we will go in. And it's not that we don't go in looking for something wrong. We go in to offer services. People sometimes are not doing the things that they should be doing, whether it's neglect, whether the way that they're caring for someone could be because of their education in the matter. We're there to really try and help, and that's what we try and let people know that we're going to see, is that we're not there to pull apart their family, but we're there to make sure that they're safe.
And Marit, you know, if someone is noticing signs of possible abuse, you know, what do people have as an option to kind of act on these signs?
Absolutely. Well, we really want to encourage people to report and to seek some assistance and guidance. If a person suspects that maltreatment is taking place or suspects that abuse is happening, we want folks to call. And the first call that a person should have in the back of their mind is emergency services if the abuse is severe, if a person is at immediate risk of harm, or if a crime is occurring. So if a theft is occurring, that's the call that we always want to make sure that people will make. If there's not an emergency, but if a person suspects that another individual is experiencing maltreatment, or if a person him or herself is experiencing abuse, calls can go to law enforcement directly. They can go to adult protection or whichever might be the receiver of a report to adult protection. In Minnesota, calls to adult protection go to the Minnesota Adult Abuse Reporting Center, which is a single common entry point phone line, and so any individual can make a report to that line in Minnesota, and those reports in Minnesota can be made anonymously, and Kathy may be able to speak to the procedure in Wisconsin as well for making an adult protection report, but then certainly reports can also be made to, or inquiries or outreach can also happen on behalf of folks who are worried about other people to advocacy organizations. So folks can call the Minnesota Elder Justice Center. And while we can't receive a report such as a law enforcement report or an adult protection report, if somebody calls us and has questions about what they should do, we can provide some guidance around that as well. And in a lot of places, in addition to advocacy organizations like us who are focused on older and vulnerable adults, you could call an advocacy organization, for example, a domestic violence resource organization, and those organizations also may be equipped to provide some resources and guidance to individuals who suspect that a person in their life might be experiencing abuse. So all kinds of organizations can take official reports. law enforcement can take official reports, adult protection can take official reports, and then other organizations can take what I would characterize as unofficial reports and provide guidance around that. So I really want to encourage people to reach out either to law enforcement, to adult protection, or to an advocacy organization if they're concerned someone they know might be experiencing abuse.
Marit Peterson, Program Director for the Minnesota Elder Justice Center, is here with us today to talk about elder abuse in the fifth installment of our monthly series on aging. Also joining us today is Kathy Gogger, Supervisor of Trempealeau County's Aging and Disability Resource Center, and Harlan Reinders, Chief Deputy Sheriff of Trempealeau County. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on different resources in our region helping protect and empower seniors. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're continuing our monthly series on aging in Wisconsin and neighboring states. Elder abuse is a growing problem in America and is projected to continue to be an issue as more of our population reaches the age of 65 and older. This abuse can come in many forms, from physical or sexual abuse to exploitation or abandonment. Joining us today to talk about what resources are available in our area and what people are doing to help address this issue are Kathy Gogger from Trempealeau County's Aging and Disability Resource Center in Whitehall, Harlan Reinders, Trempealeau County Chief Deputy Sheriff, and Marit Peterson, Program Director for the Minnesota Elder Justice Center based in St. Paul. And, you know, it seems like financial abuse is a common form that, you know, kind of has been coming up a lot in this conversation. You know, Kathy, how do you protect elderly people who, you know, might live by themselves from things like scams over the phone or scams through email? I'm sure that those are, you know, becoming more and more popular.
Yes, and it's a very, very difficult area for us to, you know, to address because of sometimes the privacy that the individual has. It happens right in their home. They don't have to talk about it to their children. They don't have to talk about it to friends. And so it is a difficult one to address and actually identify. Financial abuse is the second most common form of abuse. Self-neglect is number one. Self-neglect reports are probably 50% of the reports that we get. And then secondly is financial abuse. And it's been increasing, and we're not sure why, because even this year we've already have as many financial abuse reports as we did all of last year. So I'm not sure if it's just because we're promoting what we do and family members are calling us. We are getting more calls from financial institutions because they are allowed, if they suspect that there's something going on in an elder's account, that they, by law, can report it to us. And so we've been getting some of those. Financial abuse takes on a number of different rates. The stranger one, the scams, the phone calls that people get, and numerous of those have been identified to us. We get the grandparent scam, the one that they get the phone call and it's their grandchild who is overseas and has been arrested and needs money wired to them right away. I've had two or three people that have told me about calls like that. You get the call that they've won money, but they can't, you know, access the money until they send in, you know, $20, $30, $40, and they'll do that, and then all of a sudden it's $100. And it's amazing because these are competent people that are, you know, you would see every day that you would think, you know, there's nothing going on there, and yet they get these phone calls and they truly believe them. And so those are the hardest ones for us.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Harlan, do you feel like more of these scams are being targeted to the elderly?
Yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily I could say that more are being targeted to the elderly, but we are seeing it. You know, it's not uncommon for us to receive phone calls on a regular basis from people within Trumbull County, and they'll just say something to the effect of, you know, I got this phone call, and they're really looking for direction. They haven't been a victim of fraud or theft or anything like that, but they're just looking for some reassurance to see if this is legit or not. And so, you know, we get those phone calls, and usually they talk to an officer or a supervisor, or we can direct them in some other direction if they need some other assistance or something like that. So we do get those phone calls that people call in, and it does seem like it every year it keeps growing, and we keep on trying to put out press releases, and other law enforcement agencies are putting out press releases letting them know of, you know, the new and improved scam that's out there, but a lot of them are the same ones over and over again, and we get a little nervous that as the more we put about the press release that people just kind of start tuning it out. And so it's, delicate balance between too much information and not enough information. But, you know, it seems like the same thing. You know, we say, well, that was just on the news last week. Really watch out for that type of scam. And then the following week, somebody's scammed. And so it's an ongoing battle. And, you know, we keep on, you know, working with it and doing what we can to hopefully stop and warn people of what's going on.
And Mara, you know, we've been talking about also financial elder abuse of, from family members, from caregivers accessing, seniors' financial information. Do you feel like these cases might be becoming more popular as online shopping is becoming more prevalent and people are using services like Amazon? How do you recognize when elder abuse is happening when it's online?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I think when we look at the way that individuals are taken advantage of by exploiters or by financial abusers, you know, certainly we can see that stranger scams can result in a lot of loss, particularly via online tools. And so that, for example, could be, a person that's a stranger to an individual accessing their personal financial information and using it to create a bogus credit card and making online purchases and doing these kinds of things. And then we also certainly, we don't want to neglect to acknowledge situations in which identity theft might happen, as you identified, Hope, on behalf of a person who is a trusted individual in a victim's life. So I think identity theft happens in both those regards. And when people are making illicit purchases over the internet, representing themselves to be somebody else, whether they have permission to access someone's financial information or whether they don't have permission to access that information but have done that illicitly, we would really consider those to be instances of identity theft. And so we want to acknowledge that the internet, to some extent, does make does create risks. But another thing that it's a piece of information that I've actually heard articulated by one of our partners in Minnesota on this issue. AARP, in their Fraud Watch material here, talks about identity theft and identifies that really our information is out there in the universe, and there's not a lot that we can do to dial that back. You know, our names and phone numbers and addresses are out there. You know, our information, whether provided in the secure way or provided in an unsecure way. Payment information is available on various websites where it's stored. So the information is out there. It's really how we monitor our personal financial information that helps keep us protected. And so that's something that I certainly want to encourage folks to do, particularly if people are doing a lot of online transactions, or if folks are concerned about this, you know, just keep track of financial statements. At the Elder Justice Center, we talk about the acronym STOP, S-T-O-P, in terms of a way to prevent financial exploitation, and that could be on behalf of or financial exploitation by a stranger or by a trust person. But the STOP acronym stands for systematized finances, that's the S. So the more organized and systematic we are about our financial lives, the easier it is for us to spot inconsistencies. The T stands for tell someone. Again, that's about reporting. Tell somebody if you're experiencing something unusual, if you feel like you're being scammed or if you are scammed, tell somebody about that. There might be a way that a person can get some help. The O in the STOP acronym is obtain the documents. So if you have any kinds of resources that will help Harlan do an investigation, keep those documents, bank statements, any records that you might have, any communication that a scammer might have sent or provided, any kinds of accountings that are being provided by perhaps a family member that's serving as an attorney in fact or something like that. Keep those documents. So the O is obtain the documents. And then the P in STOP is practice saying no. It's so hard for us to say no sometimes. It's hard to say no if somebody's being friendly. It's hard to say no if somebody is in a really tough situation and we want to help. But if our gut is telling us that we ought to say no, then I think it's good for us to have practiced that so that we can really say no when we don't think that something sounds quite right, or if we have a gut feeling that the lottery that we're being told we won maybe isn't the real thing, or if somebody's being pushy in a way that we don't accept. So we encourage folks to practice saying no as the P in our STOP STOP acronym. And those are the things that I would emphasize, regardless of whether somebody is engaged in a lot of activity, financial activity online, or whether they're running their financial life in a more traditional way, using in-person banking and in-person shopping or telephone kinds of transactions.
And Harlan, did you have some follow-up to this issue of identity theft?
Yeah, just basically to add what kind of on to what Amara has said here is also make sure that you annually get a copy of your credit report. That, you know, you really need to do that. And it's amazing. I do it myself every year. I get my free credit report and I look it over, and it's actually a little scary to see all the information that's on there about yourself. But it has everything on there. So you can see every account that you have, every credit card, home loans. I mean, you name it, it's all on there. And it's a good resource, a good tool.
That's Harlan Reinders, Chief Deputy of Trempealeau County, here with us today to talk about elder abuse. Also joining our conversation is Marit Peterson, Program Director for the Minnesota Elder Justice Center, and Kathy Gogger, Supervisor of Trempealeau County's Aging and Disability Resource Center. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And Kathy, you know, you mentioned earlier that self-neglect is, you know, the most common form of elder abuse that you guys receive reports on. You know, why do you think seniors are prone to self-neglect?
Well, typically when there is self-neglect going on, there's other issues that are, you know, also happening, and quite often it's health issues. Sometimes there's a mental illness there. Sometimes there's a substance abuse issue there. And so what happens is when we get the call, we will make, we'll do a visit to the person's home, assess the situation. First of all, we look to make sure that there's no real health hazards going on that we would call in the health department for. But most often, you know, there's not. It's the person just not quite, the health is not being addressed. There is a cleanliness issue in the home. And then we assess to see if the person is competent. If we feel that there is a competency issue, then we have other means that, you know, we can make the person safe. And I had spoken before about a protective custody. We take them into protective custody. And there are a lot of parameters that involve a protective custody. And so it's nothing that we look at lightly. But if not, if the person is competent, we offer services. We talk about the things that, you know, the issues that we're seeing, try and giving them suggestions of ways to alleviate the problems that are there. Again, if the person is competent and they're saying, no, I'm fine, they have every right to live the way that they wish, as long as they're not harming others. But if they're quite often, though, that they will be agreeable to accepting services, so we attempt to help them to alleviate the conditions that they're living in.
Mm-hmm. And Harlan, you know, how do you balance people's you know, rights? How do you balance seniors' rights, you know, with trying to do you know, protect them and make sure that their well-being is safe, you know?
Well, I think it's very important for law enforcement to get one of these reports. And let's say that you don't receive any really assistance from the individual that really wants us to continue on in the investigation, you know, to offer to them resources that may not be from an investigative standpoint, and, you know, reach out to the Department of Human Services, because there's so many opportunities and so many different programs out there that are available that a lot of times people just don't know about. And so, like, again, when it comes back to, I can't, you know, stress enough the whole partnering thing. And so, you know, when it comes back to that, we got to, you know, we work together. And I think that's how we bring this together.
Mm-hmm. And Mara, you know, in cases of self-neglect, you know, how common are mental health issues a part of this, you know, situation?
Well, I think untreated mental illness and certainly, as Kathy mentioned, also substance abuse and addiction problems are certainly a significant part of that, and do prevent folks from perhaps reaching out to receive the help that they need. Again, self-neglect reporting barriers are the similar kinds of reporting barriers that we see within other forms of elder abuse. Folks might be embarrassed. They might be concerned about what the outcome of their outreach for help might be. They may not know that resources are available to them. Or they might not know of the variety of types of resources that are available, or even emergency services that might be available to somebody who had a real emergent need. So I think for all those reasons, we see self-neglect persist. And certainly untreated mental illness or ongoing mental health challenges are a significant part of that, not an insignificant part of that. But also certainly not the only reason that individuals might be engaged in self-neglecting behavior.
And Kathy, you know, Trimble County is largely rural. You know, how does that kind of factor in to dealing with elder abuse in your area?
It's there is a big issue and the problems involved because of the rural nature. When people are isolated geographically and physically, and then when a family member or caregiver isolates them even further, it's very, very difficult for us to know what's going on there. It also makes it difficult for the person to get assistance. I know Harlan had talked about our partnering with them, and we appreciate the work that Trimble County Law Enforcement does, because there are eyes and ears out there. There's quite often the first person to see a situation, and they might not be able to do anything from the criminal side of it or the law enforcement side of it, but they will do a referral to Human Services and the ADRC so that we can get in there and offer help.
And Harlan, do you have any thoughts on how, you know, rural populations kind of play into how we address elder abuse?
It is. It is very difficult. I mean, like Kathy said, it puts up a barrier. It really does. You know, that we have people that are living in their own homes, in the rural setting, and you know, maybe their old farmstead, and their closest neighbor is, you know, a half mile or a mile away. And so it's important. I think what's really important is that we go back to community and making sure that we're good neighbors and that we get to know our neighbors and those that are around us, and we check up on each other. And I think that's one of the strong points that we have in a rural community, which is very important too, is that when you're rural, you have to reach out and help each other out. And that's what we do in Trempealeau County.
We've been talking with Harlan Reinders, Chief Deputy of Trempealeau County, Kathy Gogger, Supervisor of Trempealeau County's Aging and Disability Resource Center, and Mara Peterson, Program Director for the Minnesota Elder Justice Center, about elder abuse in Wisconsin and Minnesota. Today's show is the fifth in our monthly series on issues related to aging. Every month, we hope to explore a new topic related to the growing population of people 65 and older in our area. In June, during the next show in our series, we'll talk about another issue affecting seniors in local communities. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.